Welcome into the Fan pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590. The Fan for the next hour and a half. We'll take it over to the radio portion for the remaining 30 minutes to get you set for Timberwolves and the Raptors on Sportsnet 590. The Fan tonight, new court.
Goat night,
which means greatest of all Toronto.
Yeah, so not. I mean, they are paying homage to Vince Carter,
yes,
and have been all
year. But
they're
going to have four games at the greatest.
But this
of
isn't
all
about Carter being the GOAT. It's but celebration of Toronto. Anyway, we'll just let it unfold, and we can talk about it maybe tomorrow. But an interesting one there, maybe a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, we'll talk to Daniele Franceschi here at Sportsnet 590 The Fan before that, around 7 o'clock. Frank Saravelli will join us in about 10 minutes of Daily Faceoff. And Joe Haggerty of the Boston Sports Journal around 6:35. Lots going on the network tonight, multiple NHL games. But a little breaking news the last 5 minutes. I'm sure Kipper and Bourne just got the end of it. But we'll start with fibula talk plus. Alex Ovechkin underwent further evaluation with team doctors, and it is confirmed that he has a fracture to his left fibula and is anticipated to miss 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay, smaller of the two bones
in
the lower leg.
Diagnosis.
No, but people
here
say, like, wow, fractured leg, that's awful for Ovi. And it is awful.
It sounds scary.
That he's
going
to miss up to 6 weeks. But a fractured fibula can be better than, say, a highly sprained ankle in some ways. When I had an ankle injury, they told me it'd be better off if it was fractured. So, and the fibula does attach to the ankle. So it is kind of an ankle injury, despite it being a broken lower left leg. But I think, unlike, you know, maybe a mystery injury that takes you to Munich, like, you know what you're dealing with when it's a lower left leg fracture. Ovi's season will be disrupted, but I think he'll be able to come back this year and be Alexander Ovechkin again. But yeah, the chase for Gretzky, this is going to make it difficult to accomplish this season.
Yeah, unfortunately, Ovi, his whole thing was longevity and health, and he's only missed 35 games due to injury in his entire career, which is 20 years. And I think we know that he would have broken this record already if there wasn't COVID and the lockout and all-star breaks and, you know, time that he took off. And now he's going to miss a lot of time in a season where he's already a little older, as we know, and was cruising along at a really great rate. So we hope that, you know, maybe this puts things on pause, but that he'll get back.
I think that's the key, though. Like, he's captured a moment, or he had captured a moment this season where he was just playing great hockey. Like, that line was just cooking, and they were going to continue to cook. Nothing was going to stop them from having a great season, at least it seemed, except for an injury. So he's got to recapture that once he comes back again. It's just going to take a little bit more time, as you mentioned, probably should have happened already. But yeah, it's likely next season now based on this news.
Okay, a couple other things to go through. And it's been a spicy discussion online. And we were doing the game last night with Maple Leafs on Sportsnet 590 The Fan when the hit on Matthew Knies was happening live. And so we were trying to figure out a different way to have this discussion today, because instead of just being like, do you think the hit is dirty or the hit is clean? And I think what we fell on is, why are we having so much discourse and arguments about hits like almost every night in the NHL? Because it seems to be whatever game you're watching, there's a hit that feels like it brings up discourse, whether they're dirty or not dirty. We're having these discussions. And I think that's an interesting part for us to kind of start on. I think the game has changed a lot, you know, from growing up to this point now. I think the way that the game is being played, the speed, the physicality, the skill, it's a little bit different. But for you, what's the first reason that comes to mind when I ask you, like, why are we having these discussions every night?
I think it's because we just exist in this gray area all the time. And the gray area is because you're right, it is fast and physical, and you're going to have these moments, these snapshots in time that are not all the same and need to be kind of deciphered in these very specific ways. Like, there's a lot of minutia when we're talking about body checks being thrown and really dangerous moments on sheets of ice that include blades and sticks and equipment and 225-pound males smashing into each other. Like, there are car crashes every single night. So determining the legality of car crashes, like, you need one thing, and that's like a really detailed rule book. And the NHL does have a rule book. It just collects a lot of dust. It's sitting on a shelf somewhere where no one really reads it. Like, I would say less than 1% of hockey fans have actually went through. And
I haven't.
Exactly. I haven't either. And
we've been given the opportunity
and maybe we should, right?
Yeah.
Like, but that's just how it is. There's rules, but do we even understand the rules to a certain extent? Now, I would say we kind of do, right? We don't have to necessarily go through the rule book to understand, because we were watching it last night and I was pretty confident that I was not going to be penalized because I saw a lot of legality in the hit that Zach Whitecloud levied on Matthew Nyes. But most people aren't looking at all the minutia. They see one thing and they equate it to the next thing. And what really happens is they go through the rules. And if it's not explained, if it's not told why this is legal and why this is illegal, when it's not explicit the way it needs to be, everyone just has to draw their own conclusions. And that's why people are constantly fighting over these moments in time, because we all don't understand it, because it's not communicated with the public. I think the NHL needs to do a better job just explaining why these outcomes are given, because frankly, it seems just kind of disorganized when you don't have explanations for things.
Yeah, I think it would be so much easier if things were black and white. But when there isn't a simple standard that everybody kind of agrees on or understands, then I think that there's more area for subjectivity. And that is where the discourse happens. I definitely think that the game, the speed of the game has evolved along over the last couple of years. I wonder if we're kind of having two different perspectives of hockey meeting online, where there's a generation that really, you know, has grown up with physicality and very, very heavy hockey, where brutality was almost like a part of the game, which got you like in love with the game. And you remember watching Hockey Night in Canada, where that was like a really important part of it. And there might be a newer generation or a newer fan base that sees it a little bit differently, where it's speed and skill, and less of the physicality. And when those two voices meet on social media or online or in discourse or in the office, or Sam McKee and Kipper and Bourne, like it's different voices. And I think that's totally okay. And I think that's what makes a sport, you know, something that people love for different aspects. But I think that when you can slow down a freeze frame to the smallest millisecond and really pick apart, you know, where the part of the body hit where, and you can really, like, technology has made it harder as well, because before you'd have a screen that go by, and if you thought it was dirty, it was dirty. If you thought it was clean, it was clean. But now we can really get into the minutia and was the skate blade on or off the ice. And so I think it just allows for us to have very differing opinions and evidence to back up both sides. And sometimes it doesn't feel like there's, you know, space. Either you like it or you don't like it.
Yeah. You know? The current NHL is a departure from the former NHL. So a lot of these conversations start with like, yeah, in my NHL, this is how it was. And I think the generational gap surely is fueling this discussion that's happening online. And again, there wouldn't be so much fighting without the advent of social media. You're right. But I do think in the efforts to kind of make hockey safer, you open yourself up to this, right? Like, we know that hitting and physicality has been decentivized at all levels of the NHL. So players are not necessarily ready when one player decides to step out of the, not the gentleman's agreement, but the toned down NHL. I mean, we saw it last night. Like, there's hitting, clearly, and that was a physical game. But only so often is there an opportunity where a guy sees a chance to go kind of cutting across the ice with someone with their head down and really try to punish them. And as much as it wasn't a penalty deemed by the officials, and I still think despite it not being punishable by the Department of Player Safety, it probably could have been a two-minute penalty, but wasn't. It was certainly a moment where, yeah, I think he was trying to hurt the player or punish him for what he was doing, which is skating down the middle of the ice in the neutral zone with the head down. And I think when it's being removed, all these heavy hits at the lower levels, at the collegiate ranks, minor hockey ranks, when there's less opportunity to get punished for sloppiness, frankly, having your head down in the neutral ice is sloppy hockey, well, then you're going to open yourself up to more punishment potentially later when a Zach Whitecloud is coming across, because yeah, you're used to not having to worry about getting punished because, well, you played hockey your whole life without having to deal with it. Maybe only a couple times in your career has someone taken that hard of a run at you. So while players are used to something that's less physical, physicality still exists in the game. And when one player decides to be more physical, it creates the sort of car crash that only one side is ready for.
Great points, Justin.
Oh, thank you.
Let's ask our first guest of the night, Frank Scarivelli of DailyFaceoff.com. Frank, I don't know how much you caught, but we want to start with a question that we're debating a little bit here tonight. Not if that's a clean hit or not a clean hit, but why we're still arguing about the differences in hits and what's safe and what's not safe and what's illegal and what's not every night in the NHL. Where the discrepancies are and why it's still such a major conversation almost every night in the NHL when it comes to a hit, whether it's clean or not.
Well, because there's a lot of nuance to it. And I think that part is probably lost on everyone. And it sounds like a cop out, but the truth is when you have a player who, you know, even take a side angle view of that hit White Cloud on Knies, not only is his head down, but his body is actually hunched over a little bit with the head sticking out. And when that happens, that is actually one of the few accepted times where head contact is allowed. And so, but you say that, and then it's like, well, you're just a Neanderthal. You don't understand. And we got to take all hits that involve the head out of the game. And that's not ever been the spirit of the game. And look, I'm all for moving forward and trying to find a place where the game is safer, given what we now know about head injuries. But that's not the way it's ever been played. And if we're going to go down that path and have a totally different discussion, then I'm all for that. But let's go into that eyes wide open.
So we kind of just went down a few of the reasons why we're always arguing about this. We kind of spent the first 10 minutes on, and that's certainly one of them. There's gray area. There's minutia. People don't necessarily understand all of it because, yeah, part of that is it's not really regularly explained to us. Like, they could have told us last night why that was a legal hit. I think that would have been instructive for everyone, but that doesn't really happen.
We're going to get that today, though. George Parros is appearing shortly in the next two hours. On Amazon Prime Coast to Coast tonight to talk exactly about that and explain why it is a legal hit. And so that part, I think you're totally right on, Justin, is we see the videos that come out afterwards explaining why there is a suspension equally as helpful to fans, players, and team executives and coaching staffs is the instructional video of why something does work and why that would be permissible or permittable in today's game.
I love it. That's good to hear because that's kind of, I think, exactly what we need, especially when comparing something that is punishable by DOPS law and something that isn't, at least from what we saw in the last couple Leaf games. But here's one other thing, and a reason why we're always talking about it, because it's the one thing I think in the NHL that still sparks emotion and honesty from players. Like, we heard from Darnell Nurse today, who was super mad still at Ryan Reeves about it. And everything else is buttoned down. Like, anything else that NHL players are asked about, they're trying to minimize it, be as, you know, quiet as possible about, you know, a certain topic because they just don't want it to linger. They don't want to make headlines. And yet with hits, people are honest about them. Why is it that? Like, we got Austin Matthews in Germany. No one wants to talk about it. He doesn't want to talk about his injury. But when a big hit is levied, guys will open up about how they feel. So I feel like that's part of the reason why we're always talking about it, because it's something they will talk about as well.
Well, the answer why is because there's a lot on the line. We're not talking about health today. We're talking about health, you know, when these guys are older and supposed to be playing with their grandkids. And I think that's a big reason why the conversation has changed. I will say, though, one thing that really drives me crazy is the idea that after every big hit is thrown, clean or not, there needs to be an immediate dropping of the gloves and someone has to pay and someone needs to answer for it. And there always is a scrum and or a fight when... Could you imagine if, like, 20 years ago, like, I'm not saying the 70s, I'm saying like 15, 20 years ago, every single time there was a big hit, there would be a fight? I mean, the game would never be able to be completed because there were big hits 10 times a game. I think we need to get away from that. But part of the reason why we can't escape it is exactly what we're talking about at this exact moment in time. You need to slow this down and look at it 20 times before you have a real feel whether or not it's clean. And even with that, you still get disagreement. Like, you didn't hear Craig Berube chime in on it last night because he didn't want to go there. But deep down, you could tell that he didn't necessarily agree with the hit and the ruling. So when you have the opposing coach and certainly disagreement among members in the hockey community, how are these guys supposed to police this in real time, which then further heightens the emotion, and then you take a good player out of the lineup for a period of time? It's a messy, messy situation, and I understand where the emotion comes from. I just don't know what the solution is other than perhaps in this case, which, you know, to it adds injury to insult potentially. We got to stop with the fighting after clean hits. It needs to end.
Well, sorry to interrupt. Like I was going to mention, you know, Simone Benoit, I believe it was Simone Benoit who jumped in last night. Like there's so much gray area in these hits, like a fraction one way or the other. It could have been that headshot that is suspendable, but it's not. But Simone Benoit doesn't know that. Like, no one knows in the moment until we see the replays whether or not it was bad. So it's hard to, like, even say, hey, Simone, you didn't have to fight there because, yeah, in his mind, it could have been a pretty bad hit. And it would have been criticized if he didn't go after the play.
Right. Afterwards. Then the next thing is, why are the Leafs so soft? Why aren't there guys stepping up for their teammates? And then it's a whole other thing. And I get it. I don't know the way around that other than to maybe clean up and have a better view of exactly what is good and what's not to be able to do that in real time.
Well, it'll be interesting to hear what George Parros says tonight on Amazon Prime Hockey. So we'll be tuning into that. Let's ask you about the Montgomery situation in Boston, because we've got that game a little later on the network. And we're going to talk to Joe Haggerty a little bit about the Bruins. But getting some information maybe, and I know it was Elliot Freeman on 3-2 Thoughts saying that one question maybe was that Jim Montgomery might have soured on the Bruins a little bit before the Bruins had even soured on him. Like, what is your understanding of this situation since it just happened a couple of days ago? We haven't talked to you since. Have you learned in the aftermath about the Bruins and Montgomery?
Well, there's a lot of layers to this too. And the one big revelation came from Don Sweeney when he said, hey, look, we did enter into negotiations to get an extension done and couldn't find a number that worked for everyone. And that was kind of parked off to the side. I don't have any intel as to whether or not Jim Montgomery soured on this team potentially before they soured on him. I think that's a pretty significant, you know, allegation to levy for a guy that averaged 120 points over a 2-year span prior to that. What I will say, though, is as a collective, we probably should have been paying closer to attention to the idea that, look, this is a guy that basically, especially if you take out the start to this year and you just look at his record over the last 2 years, if that's not good enough playing nearly 750 hockey to get you an extension moving forward, that probably was on the clock this, you know, as soon as the Bruins were exiting training camp, really, and a slow start would have put him in the crosshairs. I think what's difficult to reckon with now is this is a Bruins team that, for all their shortcomings this year, and Jim Montgomery certainly wouldn't be the first coach fired as his goaltender experiences a significant dip in save percentage, that the Bruins are still very much right in the thick of things in the Atlantic. Like, it's not like they got off to a start that the Oilers did last year that cost Jay Woodcroft, another coach who had a phenomenal record, his job. They were 2-9-1. This year's team was 8-9-3. Like, they're right there. So it feels to me like a situation that, you know, again, had multiple layers to it that all kind of contributed or compounded into this decision being made.
Okay, so you mentioned it there. They're still in the Atlantic Division race. The season is still rescuable, if that's a word. But have you started looking at the potential of a fire sale involving the Bruins and how it might shape what we see a couple months from now with the trade deadline?
I haven't because, well, for one, I don't think that's anything within the Bruins' intentions. Like, they go out and spend $80 million this summer. It's not to start selling off pieces at the deadline. And it's actually more than that if you include the Jeremy Swayman extension. And so I do think, and I've said this multiple times on this show, that the Bruins have underachieved, but I'm still a believer. I don't think it'll get to that point. But even if it were to, there's so many guys that have term and significant dollars left that really the pieces that are going to garner the most attention and interest are guys way further down the lineup, like a Trent Frederick or, you know, guys that don't have those types of, you know, restrictions that are on them with their contracts, where they would be the just not all that different than Pittsburgh guys that have, you know, value further down. Marcus Pettersson, pending unrestricted free agent, Jack St. Ivany, you know, go through the list of Penguins players that might be able to generate some. The Bruins might be in a pretty similar situation.
We're joining with Frank Saravalli of DailyFaceoff.com. A bunch of games on the network tonight. I want to ask you about Calgary Flames goaltender Dustin Wolf and his push for the Calder Trophy. You know, it was one of the options earlier on, and we discussed it like a couple months ago. But it looks like he's maybe taken over that spot as a starter, or he's getting an opportunity to as well. A 23-year-old for the Calgary Flames, winning 7 of his 10 starts with a .236 goals against average and a .925 save percentage. Like, how much should we be buying stock, maybe, if we were buyers?
Look, I'm going to put a stake in the ground right now and say that if I were submitting a Calder Trophy ballot today, Dustin Wolf would be my top candidate. And I know that this is not how Calder Trophy voting works, and I know how unusual it is for a goaltender to win one, Steve Mason being the last. Look, Wolf has certainly delivered to this point for the Flames. There's a reason why they sit in a playoff spot today, 1 point out of the Pacific Division lead. Fantastic start to their year, and then they kind of stubbed their toe for a minute and then got things back on the rails. What's more impressive is the Calgary Flames, on the back of Dustin Wolf and sharing the load has been Dan Vladar. Their last 16 games, they haven't scored more than 3 goals in any one of them. So they've done it with very little run support, which has been really interesting. And they're comfortable in close games. So I know that Wolf has a little bit of ways to go in terms of ramping up the quality of competition. The Flames basically went into this season with a game plan of, let's split the first 10. Let's let Wolf wade into this season, his first full NHL season, and we'll give him some matchups that we think will best enable him to get comfortable in the NHL. And then after that, we're going to go with the hot hand. So Wolf has played 5 of the last 7. Tonight is his 3rd consecutive start, and they're willing to let him run with the ball, provided that he keeps holding up his end of the bargain, which to this point has not been any trouble.
Last one for you, Frank. Is this real, the beef, Ilya Samsonov and Lena Solmark? It's, you know, your network covering this one pretty well. So detail it for us. Like, is there some real animosity, some real heat heading into tonight's game, Vegas and Ottawa?
I have no idea. I can't get in the head of either one of these guys and why you feel the need to make a comment on Instagram knowing that people are going to see it. That said, I'm all for it. Like, if we're going to go down this path of being a little more NBA-ish, like, let's go. Let's take the gloves off. But, like, that means you also have to talk about it, and you have to answer for it. You can't just hide and say, oh, well, like, you know, we're just whatever it is. You got to, if you're going to do it, you got to back it up. And so let's see what that looks like tonight.
Yeah, for those that missed it, a little bit of spice last year on Instagram and on some podcasts, and now they get the opportunity to play against each other tonight. So Allmark versus Samsonov will be fun. Frank, we appreciate you coming on tonight, and we'll chat next week. Have a great weekend.
See you guys.
That's Frank Saravelli of DailyFaceoff.com. So what happened was there was a post ranking some of the goaltenders.
Yeah.
And number 10 was Linus Ullmark. And Ilya Samsonov commented number 10 with a heart. And then he, I don't know, there's a reply in to his own comment from Ilya Samsonov himself. So, like, if you had a burner account, you would log out and then respond to this comment.
Oh, okay.
Well,
I didn't know it was this deep. No,
well,
go
no,
on.
No, no. So somebody commented, he commented replying to himself.
Okay.
November 21, keep your beep shut or are you injured again? And they kind of look like maybe he accidentally commented on a post to try to, anyway, I'm saying.
The first salvo was Linus Ullmark saying, hey, like, they should have kept Joseph Woll in, that being in the playoff series versus the Leafs, in a podcast saying,
I was surprised that Toronto kept Samsonov in for as many games against us in the playoffs because every time I felt Leafs, when we played the Leafs and Joseph Woll, it felt like it was more of a challenge. Mm-hmm. That was on the Leafs Nation podcast.
Yeah, so, Leafs Morning Take. We should shout them out.
Yeah, for sure. And so there's a little bit of spice between them, and they get the opportunity to play each other tonight.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I mean, Samsonov, we talked about it yesterday, not necessarily rising to the occasion when there's like actual storylines heading into a game.
Tonight he will.
So we'll see. Maybe we'll touch on that a little bit in our best bets later.
Yes. Joe Haggerty is going to join us on the other side of the break at the Boston Sports Journal. Then we'll take a break and go to radio only with Daniele Franceschi to tee up the Raptors and Timberwolves tonight. Timberwolves have a really poor record on the road against Toronto. Lost 19 straight games here.
Ooh, I might have to rethink my bet.
You might have to. We'll be right back. Fan pregame.
Hey, it's Matt Marchese.
And I'm Mike Fiuta.
We're discussing the top stories of the day across the NHL and the hockey world, weekdays at noon.
It's the Fan Hockey Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back on the Fan pregame, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. On the network tonight, we've got Utah and Boston. That's on Sportsnet Ontario in about half an hour. And on Sportsnet East and Pacific, you've got Colorado and Washington. Without Ovi, he's got a fibula fracture just announced today. He's going to miss 4 to 6 weeks. If you're looking for Dustin Wolf and the Calgary Flames, New York Rangers, that's a 9 p.m. start on Sportsnet 1, and then the Wild and the Oilers play at 9 p.m. on Sportsnet West.
And if you just missed it on the previous side of the break, Frank Saravalli, circling Dustin Wolf as his current Calder Trophy frontrunner a month into the season. He's had quite the impact with the Flames to start. The Flames, you know, we were talking about them a lot to start the season because they had that little undefeated run, but they're, like, firmly still in the playoff pitcher. They're playing really, really well. If there's one team that we didn't expect to be sort of in that group in the Western Conference, it's definitely the Flames, mm-hmm. who continue to play really, really well.
Okay, so there he's 7.5 to 1, by the way, if you're looking at betting him, because I know you were.
I may have a better price, I'm not going to lie to you.
Well, yeah, you can't go back in time. Okay, let's talk about a little Bruins action. Why are you laughing?
You're right. Can't go back in time.
Okay. Elliot Friedman on 32 Thoughts said the following. Sweeney confirmed one thing about Jim Montgomery, that the Bruins and their ex-coach in the final season of his contract engaged in failed extension conversations. Maybe we'll never know the full story, but there are people who believe he was unsure about Boston even before they were unsure about him. It's like, I'm going to break up with you before you break up with me.
Yeah, and when that's like the rhetoric, right, for any relationship, like it's eventually, like there's only one end result when you start playing those games. It's that you are going to break up eventually in the Boston Bruins.
But it's crazy with the record, right?
And Jim Montgomery did. In some ways. But, like, again, we talked about it yesterday. Coaching in the NHL nowadays, it's like, what have you done for me lately? Mm. It is smash and grab stuff. It's you have that impact. And once people stop listening to you, it's over. It doesn't really matter what the record is. It's over once you have that fracture in the relationship. A lot of relationships can start out great. Have a great record if you want to equate it that way, and then it just doesn't really work out. But the one thing with head coaches is they are so disposable nowadays, at least it seems, mm-hmm. right? Across really all sports. There's not many guys who stand the test of time, can really last long. It's really only John Cooper in the NHL right now. So you're kind of clinging to that job. You're clinging to just being employed if you're an NHL coach nowadays. And to hear that one may have been like, you know what, I'm not really sure I want to continue with this, even if they didn't go that far. It's definitely interesting. I wonder if Jim Montgomery feels like when he had that Jack Adams season, when you come back and you win games despite everyone out because they had offseason surgery, mm-hmm. and you keep going on the path that you're on, you keep winning games, you build that record, you think, hey, like, I may be above this. Like, I'm hireable. It doesn't matter if I don't get a contract because there might be a better opportunity waiting for me on the other side of this 3-year deal that he had with the Bruins. You don't generally get that from NHL coaches, but we might have there from Jim Montgomery.
So, like, jumping off the moving train when you know that,
like, my best
is
work
waiting.
Is done here. Mm-hmm. I can't do much.
It's an interesting theory because I can't picture something similar. Like, you want job security. You don't want to be one of the coaches without a job, because there was a musical chairs that was happening for the last couple of years where it's like, do I really want to take this job? But, like, what is the most desirable role to take over right now? If the Pittsburgh Penguins fired Sullivan, you want that job? No.
No, you don't.
You don't really, like, who else is underperforming? The Nashville Predators? I mean, maybe that's an interesting one. Like, do you want to take over there? I'm just trying to think, like, whose hot seat is hot enough that you're thinking, you know, a couple steps ahead that, oh, that's the seat.
There's
like
always
to be
teams,
at.
Though, that underperform, right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, we just saw it here in this market with the Toronto Maple Leafs. They had the record. They had the coach that had good regular season records, but a change needed to be made. And Craig Berube inherits what is a really strong, at least core group of players and building under Brad Treliving. I mean, the Edmonton Oilers changed coaches last year. That's the dream job, you'd
that's
think,
true.
For most guys who have the chance to coach Connor McDavid. Like, it just doesn't last long. It's fleeting for everyone. So if you put yourself in position where you leave as such an accomplished guy who did so well with, frankly, a shorter deck than, I don't know, half the teams in the league, at least in terms of overall talent, the Boston Bruins are really, really strong in that regard, but not as strong as they once were. Maybe he did think the grass was going to be greener somewhere else.
Well, coach is in the hot seat. I know we talk about that often, but I would say, like, number one would be Mike Sullivan with the Pittsburgh Penguins right now, even though, you know, it's the same thing. It's not like that team just needs a new coach. They need a lot of new bodies, in a sense, and a new organization to run it. Maybe Derek Lalonde with the Red Wings?
Yeah, it may not be necessarily any better.
Same kind of thing.
The seat is definitely hot him. The seat's hot with Andrew Brunette.
Andrew Brunette.
There are a couple seats that are pretty warm, I think, in the NHL. No white flags maybe waved yet. Mm-hmm. Even Nashville, maybe they can still figure things out here in the next couple weeks. But, yeah, there's going to be just some decisions made. And Jim Montgomery's resume is pretty bulletproof. It's pretty good. I think he's going to have a lot of interest, and someone's going to knock on his door probably before the end of the year, at least in terms of conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he'll do quite well, like, in terms of his opportunities this year. Take the rest of the year off, maybe wait it out and see what happens. I'm sure there'll be some teams that fail in the playoffs that get an opportunity to have a new voice, but I'm looking at the standings, like, who's super underperforming. I guess you're looking at the Preds, you're looking at, I mean, the Red Wings and Canadiens and Senators and Bruins and Sabres are all in that little mushy end of the Atlantic. Blue Jackets, nobody expected too much. Flyers and Islanders, like, it's... There's not somebody that I'm circling right now that you'd want to jump in and be like, I can fix this team.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine he would wait until the end of the season when a team has underperformed when it matters the most and a change is made then, right? Like, I don't think he wants to pick up the scraps left right now in Detroit. I think he'd probably wait until, hey, you know, maybe it doesn't work out for the Dallas Stars again in the postseason and maybe they make a change despite Pete DeBoer obviously having very high pedigree. Maybe... the same way it worked with Bruce Cassidy in Boston, it finally works in Vegas where his smash and grab style wears off with the Vegas Golden Knights. Like, it just feels like there are a ton of options. Jared Bednar was being talked about as potentially disposable a couple weeks ago, but the Avalanche have turned things around a little bit of late. There's never a shortage of openings, shortage of jobs, but there are always openings, and Jim Montgomery looks like he's in prime position to fill one if he wants to.
Oh, sorry, my mic was off. We're waiting to get Joe Haggerty of the Boston Sports Journal on. But anything more to fill in terms of our discussion about arguing about hits in the NHL? Earlier on, we discussed it because obviously this has been a hot topic in the NHL the last couple of days. Every time that there's a hit, it's like a bunch of different perspectives, and it's not tame. You know, it's not like, oh, yeah, totally agree with your point, or I can see your point. It's very like antagonistic at times, and I think it's emotional,
and that's fandom, right? Like, I understand mm-hmm. why people, if you're a fan of the Toronto Maple Leafs, you're like, you're so mad that Matthew Nyes got hit mm-hmm. like that. Like, it was like,
oh yeah, and that's why,
like,
the players
slamming his head
like
on
that.
The ice yep. after it gets hit by Zach Whitecloud. It's a violent, dangerous thing, and of course this is a guy with a history of head injuries, so you're worried about the health of a really important player for the Maple Leafs. But when you're trying to step back from it and actually think about why we're having these conversations, I think that's one of them. It's just people are fanatical about their teams and the health of them. But I also think a big one is that there is a lack of options, honestly, in the NHL in terms of talking points. You know what I mean? Like,
there's the cap. Okay, there's the cap and the money that
yeah,
the players
make. How are we going to squeeze this player?
There's... which fan base is the most tortured and which fan
sure.
base deserves to win the
you
most?
You could do that, I guess, you
could
weekly.
You can talk
to.
About how loud some arenas are and how quiet some... I'm just thinking, you know, we live in
the
Toronto.
Best storyline of the entire season was taken away from us with Alexander Ovechkin going out with the injury, right? And that takes away some of the energy. That takes away takes up and absorbs some of the conversation, at least, when thinking about what's ahead. But we kind of touched on it with Frank. Like, if guys don't want to be open, if it's not like the NBA where they're calling each other out on Twitter all the time, we're going to get Joel Embiid a little bit later, but it's just not that dramatic. It's mm-hmm. only dramatic when hits are involved. It's only dramatic when Darnell Nurse, a week later, is mm-hmm. still really mad
at Ryan
Reeves.
Yeah, I was going to read that quote for those that didn't hear. Darnell Nurse today in front of the media was asked, obviously, about the hit by Ryan Reeves and said the following. There's an onus on me to be aware of where everyone is. I was unsure if I was aware enough. But there's also an onus on the person that's throwing the hit to the body, Nurse said. It's one thing if my head is between my knees, but I was in skating posture. Reeves is elevating at that point to hit someone in the head. And then he ends up saying, even if you put yourself in a bad spot, there's a lot of body on a 6'4" hockey player to hit, and not one piece was touched other than my head.
Mm-hmm.
You could argue about the intent, but there are certain guys in the league that every shift they go out there, they try and inflict pain. I think it's pretty obvious what's going on there.
Yeah, so he's not over it, right? And again, you don't, like any other topic in the NHL, do you get answers like that? Where they're calling out someone from another team? Like, we never see anything like that. The only time guys are critical of other players, really, in the NHL at all, in scrums, in post games, between whatever, interviews, whenever there's criticism, it's because someone hit someone a certain way or there was a moment of physicality that others took exception to. There's not guys who are like Linus Ullmark and Ilya Samsonov, a rare case where they're calling each other out online or on podcasts. It's just kind of a league where they're trying to suffocate all the drama. They're trying to tamp all that juicy headline grabbing stuff down as much as possible. So when you get something that is and has to be polarizing and controversial and people will opine on it, like, it's just, it opens it up for everyone to have their opinion. It is kind of the perfect elixir for something to argue about online, especially when the players are willing to engage themselves.
Okay, so it doesn't look like we're going to get Joe. So let's talk a little bit about this Raptors game tonight, because we do have some good positive injury news, and that's that Scotty Barnes is back in the lineup tonight after missing like about 3 weeks or more. Trying to get the exact date of when Scotty was out there last, but it's good to have him back. Obviously, we saw the face mask with the really red eye. Like, he looked like a villain. But yeah, he's missing. He missed 11 games, just over 3 weeks with that orbital fracture. I think that's probably the worst thing. And like, I in terms of things I'd like to fracture, that's probably the last.
You take the fibula over the
I think I'd take the fibula over the
although orbital. The return seems to be quicker for the orbital.
That's true,
I can't even say that.
But you think,
orbital.
Think about playing after that. Fracture. Like, he's going to have to wear goggles, and he's got, like, to be very careful with his face. And in basketball, someone's arm just, that's what happens. Whacks you in the face, you break your orbital bone.
You got it down pat.
He's back in there, so it'll be good to see him tonight. I think he's going to be on a minutes restriction, but it'll be a good opportunity to see. This is the thing with the Raptors, right? It's that dilemma of trying to get all the young guys together, but also, hey, don't do too well because we want to lose. But you got Scotty Barnes tonight, and I think it'll be great against the T-Wolves. And it's quite the interesting court. I don't know if anyone's had a chance to check it out yet or if you're seeing anything on social media, but tonight's a special goat night, and they've got the Raptor dunking in the middle of the court. And this is not their in-season Emirates NBA Cup.
It's not meant to blind
you. This is a different court. The crew at Scotiabank Arena is really grinding. They have multiple courts to put up in between Leafs games and other things.
Yeah, they're specialists, though. Scotty Barnes, you know, the return is, you need it, right? If you're a Raptors fan, you need it. If you're a Raptors fan or Raptors team trying to win games. But I do wonder how it will affect them tonight, right? Because they found like a little something in terms of competitiveness with guys sort of at the bottom of the rotation getting a little bit more time in the absence of Scotty Barnes, Emmanuel Quickley, Kelly Olynyk, et cetera, et cetera. You go down the line, they're missing a lot of bodies and have missed a lot of bodies to start the year. But it all does revolve around Scotty Barnes when Scotty Barnes is available for the Raptors. He's the guy. He's the everything man for the Toronto Raptors. So it's going to shake them, I think, a little bit out of their routine, out of what's kind of worked for them lately with Grady Dick seeing a lot more of the ball and a lot of other guys getting opportunities. Jakob Poeltl has, you know, absorbed a lot of that responsibility in his absence, putting up the numbers that he has. So Scotty Barnes' return, like, I don't know if you should expect it to be seamless. You'd love it if it was seamless and everyone knew how to play their game around Scotty Barnes, who, again, is the centerpiece of everything. But I think there's going to be some irons, there's things to iron out in that sense, too, because they just haven't played that much with Scotty Barnes, again, for which this is all built on. So it'll be interesting to see how well they're able to acclimate with the new situation with Scotty Barnes back. But yeah, it's pretty important that things work around Scotty, because despite the success and despite his absence, he's still the number one guy in terms of import when it comes to the Toronto Raptors.
And the Raptors 13th in the East, ahead of the Wizards, who are 2-11, and ahead of the Sixers, who are 2-12. And now the Sixers, I mean, we can get into this now with Joel Embiid. It's maybe past like embarrassing. I think it's probably just like a terrible look on the sport in a sense, like just to be, everything that's coming out of that organization and that dressing room. And I don't know how you move forward with these pieces together, like with these players and people leaking information at Sixers team meetings and like having no trust in that locker room, no trust in your players, no trust in your coaching staff, and you're beating up reporters. Like, it's like a
beating up is a bit of a stretch.
A
shove on the shoulder.
There
was a shove.
You are shoving reporters. I think that one was deserved. But it's just every day something comes out that you're like, come on. It's a really
hard spot. Someone's got to get in Joel Embiid's ear. Like, someone's got to save him from himself.
I don't think there's any saving.
I know.
Like, what do you say, man?
You can't take the $193 million that he signed for over a three-year stretch away from him. He's going to earn that money. He's going to be a very wealthy man forever. He may never be a winner in the NBA. If I was, going to bet on one, it would be no at this point, given that his body seems to be breaking down. He doesn't necessarily have the drive that you need to be a champion, or at least it doesn't really seem the best that he's done, at least in terms of team success, is grabbing a U.S. passport and playing rings chasing, as I put it, at the Olympics with Team USA, and they gladly brought him in open arms. But that just might be the pinnacle for Joel Embiid, who seems to love making excuses, blaming others, not taking responsibility. This is supposed to be one of the best players in the NBA, one of the guys who could win MVP, one of the guys who could actually lead you to a title, but he's basically shown you over the last 6 months, year, 18 months, it's kind of slowly devolving, it seems, into someone that you can't win with. And I feel bad for a guy like Tyrese Maxey. Lowry's trying to keep it together, Kyle's, at the end of the year, at the end of his rope. But, Tyrese Maxey's a really good young player who, probably, not that you deserve to play with a certain player or a certain talent, but if you're that guy, you deserve to step into more of a role, not be kind of tamped down by the situation, by the star that was supposed to make you even better than you already are. Paul George comes in free agency and maybe he kind of knew what he was getting into. He's in the content game, so maybe he doesn't care. Maybe this is good for Paul George, but if it's, good for a 76ers fan, it's just not. The 76ers have been a laughingstock for a while. Like, through the process days to now, it would suck to be a 76ers fan. It just haven't delivered on the promise, and Joel Embiid's certainly not doing that now.
I'll say a lot of credit to Tyrese Maxey, because to stand up against, I don't know the confrontation, but to say, man, you're just going to be on time for things. Like, that is the easiest standard. Like, when you join a team, you join a company, you work somewhere, be on time, be a good person, and be dedicated to your craft. And if you can't be on time, it's just showing that, you don't care about anyone else's approach and you're putting yourself above the team. And so for Tyrese Maxey to at least start at that point and call him out, a younger guy to say that to Joel Embiid and know that, it's not going to go over well, that's good. That's good leadership.
Why do neither of us feel bad for Nick Nurse?
Because he chose that. Didn't he say something where he's like, good luck with those guys to the Raptors, and now the Raptors are,
I think that
like,
was about the media, which again,
he just kind of was like, nah, I'm too good for this now.
Yeah, Nick
Nurse. And now you're with the worst team in the NBA.
It was a bit of an unsavory last year for Nick
Nurse. Yes, it was unsavory. He was campaigning. Remember, he would get on the podium and be like, looking around elsewhere already.
Yeah.
That's why I don't feel bad for him.
He did the Jim Montgomery, one foot out the door.
He did.
He made up his mind before the Raptors did.
He did the Jim Montgomery. Maybe. Well,
allegedly.
Yes, allegedly.
Reportedly.
But no, I don't feel too bad. Do you think there's a market for Joel Embiid?
Yeah.
You think somebody would trade?
Desperation can rule
him?
The roost in the NBA, right? Like, if you follow Kevin Durant's career, you understand that teams will do some pretty crazy things just to get superstars in the fold. And Kevin Durant is by no means in the Joel Embiid camp. So it would be reaching lower in terms of desperation moves. Kevin Durant's still very talented, and it just didn't work out with these kind of Hail Mary moves around him for the last 5 years or so. But the talent is the talent. And if you feel like it's just the market that's, causing this with Joel Embiid, like it's this nasty, feedback loop where there's so much criticism and so much noise and it just keeps going and going and going, maybe he lands in a smaller market with a good team, and he can kind of quietly play basketball.
The good team that's not going to chew him up.
They let you get in shape. like, it, slowly during the season in a way that only Joel Embiid apparently can demand. But, like, if he wound up in Sacramento, you can't tell me that things wouldn't be a little quieter.
Probably. But he brings the noise with him.
He does.
And they're like, 11th in the West and, you know, around 500. I mean, I don't know.
And again, I just pulled
I would
one
not
out
be,
there.
Yeah, no, I would not be, like, lining up to trade for that guy.
No.
No. So I think we'll see how this one devolves because it continues to do so. Okay, a couple more things before we wrap up, go to the radio-only segment. Aaron Judge, unanimous AL MVP, just announced. I mean, I think that one's not that surprising.
Yeah, there wasn't much intrigue when it came to Major League Baseball awards. No. We have to wait forever for them.
I don't like how they sprinkled them out.
And now, you know, it's almost Thanksgiving. We're still talking awards. Like, I'd like actually, like, when we're talking about the struggles with Judge in a World Series, and he's the actual most valuable player of the league this year, I think it would just hit a little different. Like, it would add a little bit more to that situation if you had already named him MVP. But yeah, Shohei is probably going to win unanimously. Mm-hmm. Chris Sale, I think, was pretty close.
Yeah, pretty
Paul
close.
Paul Skenes was maybe a little bit of a surprise with the rookie of the year. But
yeah, it was Aaron.
Oh, Tarek Skubal would have been unanimous too.
Aaron Judge, 30 first place votes, of course. Nobody else getting any. All second place votes, unanimously second place, Bobby Wood Jr.
Pretty good.
And then almost unanimously third place, Juan Soto, 21 votes there. And then the rest were sprinkled between Gunnar Henderson and Jose Ramirez.
Okay, so almost everyone was on board.
Yeah, there you go.
Congrats to Aaron Judge.
Congrats. We'll see how next year looks. And let's take a look at some of our best bets tonight before we wrap up. You know what? We've been talking a lot about the Bruins tonight. And I believe in, like, a fresh energy, new juju, new vibes. So they are playing at home against Utah, who you don't seem to think are very good. I'm just going to pick the Bruins to win tonight.
Yeah, I'm down on Utah.
I'm just going to pick the Bruins to win tonight. They got a new coach, the new coach bounce that like they need to come out there and play with a little pride. And so I'm just going to bet the team that's not that terrible to win tonight.
New coach bounce.
Yes.
New coach bounce with Joe Sacco. We'll see how dialed in the Bruins are in this opportunity to, I guess, free themselves from the coaching that was Jim Montgomery. It'll be interesting to see how they perform tonight. I was interested, and I am interested, in this Vegas-Ottawa game because it's Ilya Samsonov versus Linus Ullmark, the war of words on Instagram between them and on podcasts. But we know, you know, the history with Ilya Samsonov and how he doesn't necessarily step up to the plate. So I was kind of feeling the Senators. But minus 165 favorites against Vegas, like I can't even fathom laying it with Ottawa with a good team like Vegas meeting on the second half of a back-to-back. But still, that's a difficult matchup for Ottawa, I think. So I don't want to chase that price. Instead, I'll go to the Raptors and T-Wolves, and I'm going with the T-Wolves. I think there's going to be a little bit of a feeling.
My stat, they've lost 19 consecutive games in Toronto.
You had me second guessing
it for a second. The last time they won was 2004.
All streaks come to an end.
I mean, we said that last year.
We did. But the T-Wolves, I do think with Toronto, Scotty Barnes coming back, minutes restriction, so maybe not that much time, and you're trying to work things out. You're trying to figure out how it's all going to work once again when they've been in a bit of a rhythm here, which has had them competing with the Celtics and winning more games than they really want to at this point. I think, you know, the T-Wolves, good team coming into town. They haven't been playing that well lately. It's kind of a get-right spot in some ways for the Minnesota Timberwolves, despite playing so poorly in Toronto. Historically, I think they cover the 7.
Okay. The Raptors are good, A, against them, and B, at covering the spread.
They are.
We'll see what happens tonight.
Look, it might be a bad pick.
That's fine. You've been doing extremely well.
Once you said that, I lost
I mushed you. That's too bad. Hey, we were talking about hits today. One little tidbit that I saw, Christina Rutherford tweeted this. Former NHLer Ryan Getzlaf has been running orientation sessions for the PWHL to work on hitting, because I for those that watched the PWHL last year, they were like, wow, it's so physical, because the girls are kind of more encouraged to hit, which wasn't something we did before. So Ryan Getzlaf kind of running these sessions, like teaching people how to hit. So
that's cool. I wouldn't have thought of Ryan Getzlaf initially.
I mean, he's just a good leader.
Where are they doing this? I didn't think he left California.
He's been going to their camps.
I didn't think he left California.
Well,
he had to flip-flop to the rink guy, if I ever knew him.
I think that's a great idea, because I remember when I shifted from boys to girls hockey, I was like, nobody knows how to even position your body properly for incidental contact. So I'm glad that...
And now that problem is afflicting the NHL. and causing everyone to fight online on a nightly basis.
All right. No more fighting. Let's just all be friends.
Clean hit?
I think it's pretty clean.
Yeah.
I think it's clean hit. Clean. All right. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back on Sportsnet 590 The Fan for the next half hour before Timberwolves and Raptors.